to listen to the Left Traffic Podcast.
What is up, Left Traffic Nation? The Siren. Welcome to episode 152 of the Left Traffic Podcast. I am your host, the Professor Brandon Crowd. Yes, a little siren action there, an ode to Chase Elliott's win, and the PETM podcast down in Atlanta, Georgia, which is not too far from the Dawsonville pool room there. And speaking of the PETM podcast, if you missed it, some fun was had last night on a rare Monday with the PETM podcast and the Professor. We had some fun over there on PETM number 214. So make sure you definitely go check that out. Either listen to it on iTunes or go have some fun watching it on YouTube. See some animation between me, Rusty Sherwin, and I'm not sure if you can go see the chat as on a playback, but definitely go check it out one way or another. All right. Hope you all had a fantastic weekend. It was a pretty busy weekend over here, but a fun weekend at that. If you guys missed it last week when PETM was on Lap Traffic, which I encourage you to go check that out as well if you haven't already, you heard me mention that last Tuesday was my 8-year wedding anniversary. So Friday night, took the wife out to dinner, went downtown. Had a good time. Saturday, kind of lounged around a little bit, took in the Xfinity race, watched a little bit of the Michigan game, which finally, Michigan played a game. Unfortunately, it was against Rutgers, so they did what they were supposed to do. Not sure that's any indication they've improved at all from the beatdown they took from Wisconsin a couple weeks ago. And then Sunday, wow. Went to the Lions game and came home, caught up on the race on the DVR, and man, how about that Lions game? Almost pulled off the impossible and beating Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City, but in typical Lions fashion, after playing a great game, just couldn't get it done. They had it to 2 minutes, and you had to go and give up a 4th and 8, which let them march down the field, and that was all she wrote. But I will say, they played a full game, which usually the Lions only like to play about 3 quarters. They played a full 60 minutes, showed some spark. We'll see what happens the rest of the season. As a Lions fan who's still waiting, to be able to go to a home playoff game, their last playoff win was 60 years ago, I think it was, something like that. So, yeah. But I was successfully able to stay in the bubble on Sunday. The only thing I checked was Yahoo Fantasy Football. Once I walked into the stadium, I didn't even dare go near Twitter so that I could come home and watch the race with as much excitement as possible, not knowing who won. And I'm glad I did, and I'm glad I was able to manage to stay in the bubble, which is not easy to do, especially if you are addicted to social media. But we pulled it off, and very excited, very happy about that. All right, so racing, the Roval, a lot to talk about there. What a weekend of racing at the Roval. Obviously, the excitement because it's new, right? It's only the second year. Everybody is on the road course bandwagon. Love that they added one to the playoffs. And it's the furthest thing from a cookie cutter track. It puts the race in the hands of the driver. Had the success of the Roval last year after its debut. There was talk, should we implement the Roval at more tracks? Should we look at it at tracks that we go 2 times a year that maybe don't draw big crowds? Michigan, for example. And I tell you, if we want to keep excitement and attraction to certain events, you cannot flood and oversaturate the schedule with those types of races. I absolutely love this race. It was fun. It puts this list on the list of races that you want to go to, that you'll travel to. If you're outside the Charlotte area, or if you're outside of your home track area, traveling to a race may not be the easiest thing. But there are certain races that everybody's got to go to at least once, right? This now becomes one of those races. It's like Eldora. It's special. It gives you a race to look forward to. Now, Could they get away with adding a Roval somewhere else on the schedule during the regular season? I think so. You could add one more, maybe. You look at the Xfinity Series, which they run a stretch of three road course races in a four-week period. You know, we got Sonoma in June. We got the Glen in August. Now, you know, almost 4 months from the start of the season till our first road course. So they could probably add or shift the schedule a little bit. So where that you had one maybe in April or May, get one June, get one August, and then you get the Roval at Charlotte in the playoffs. I think something like that could work. I'm not saying they need to go and do it. I'm saying they could go and do it, and it wouldn't lose its touch. I think it would need to be a unique track that they do it at. I don't think that they should just start doing that at all the tracks that, you know, we go to twice or anything like that. But I wouldn't be opposed. I want to preserve the excitement behind it, though. And I think that is definitely key. All right. Wow. 6 minute ramble there. Sorry, guys. Before I get to today's show, don't forget the Lap Traffic Podcast is a part of the Big Heads Media Network. Big Heads has you covered from sports to entertainment. So go check out bigheadsmedia.com. Another awesome show lined up for you guys, of course, right? Tonight's guest from Venturini Motorsports, Michael Self, will be on in just a minute. The trucks, yeah, we're still off. One of these days we'll get to talk a truck race. And then got your Xfinity and Cup recap from the Roval. Social media shout-outs, a new little mini contest I got for you guys. Some silly season talk. Brian Newdorf will have your weather. Lucky dog lap down picks and fantasy to close it out as always. All right, let's get tonight's guest on the line. Lapped Traffic Nation joining me on the line, making his first appearance on the Lapped Traffic Podcast. He is the driver of the number 25 Sinclair Lubricants Toyota for Venturini Motorsports. He has 4 wins on the season, including my home track at MIS, and is the current Arca Menards points leader with 2 races to go. Welcome to the show, Michael Self. Man, what's up? How are you?
Yeah, good. Good to be on tonight, and excited to check in with you for the first time here.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. The cool thing is a lot of people end up coming back. So something tells me this won't be the first time you're on the show, but happy to have you. All right. So before we get into this season, you've got quite the resume that I'd like you to talk about because I think it's awesome. Karts, open wheel, NASCAR wheeling, late model, K&N, some Xfinity starts. Now your first full-time season competing and running for the ARCA Championship. Talk a little bit about the early part. What got you into racing and all that good stuff?
So my dad is really the one who fueled it and drove the whole effort. He never really raced himself, but he grew up in Birmingham, Alabama. And when he was growing up, his best friend's dad owned a Chevrolet dealership that sponsored Bobby Allison. And so through his buddy, they used to go and they got to know Bobby a little bit. You know, this was back in this was the 70s and 80s, I guess. And got to know Bobby a little bit and kind of got to be friends with him and the rest of the family. And my dad was just kind of always around racing. Like I said, he never raced himself. But always had a passion for it. And so that translated over to me when I was born. You know, we always watched racing together on Sundays. That was just kind of what we did. And we basically got into it by starting out on motorcycles, dirt bikes.
Okay.
We were out in Salt Lake City at the time and did a lot of dirt bikes and ATV stuff, a little bit of racing in that. And then one day my dad actually just happened to see some folks drive by his car dealership with some go-karts on a trailer. And he ran out and flagged him down, waving at him and said, "Hey, where do you guys do that at?" And it turns out that the lone track there in Utah was just a couple minutes down the road from his dealership.
Okay.
So, you know, to make what can be a long story a little bit short, we got into kart racing that year. I think that was in 2001 there, kind of at the local level. And then that just led to racing regionally out west, and that led to racing nationally, and then got to go overseas a little bit. We were always pretty fortunate and had good results in the karting stuff, and that kind of led to up the open wheel ladder, as I guess most kart racers and road racers do, and got to do some of the Skip Barber stuff. And actually was backed by Champ Car when that was still around. I think that was back in 2006 to 2007, and it was kind of part of their ladder scholarship program and got to do a little bit of ProMaza testing and was really slated to go that route until Champ Car merged with IndyCar. In which case, you know, my deal kind of it was a little bit uncertain at the time. And because I'd grown up watching NASCAR and stock car racing, I was always interested in it. I wanted to give it a try. Okay. So we basically, without any oval experience at all, any big car experience, we found someone with a late model program out in Roseville, California, and ended up going out there and doing a test with them. And I really enjoyed it. You know, I'm not going to lie and say I was the best one out there, but sure. I enjoyed it. I like switching it up and trying something different. So we kind of decided to pursue that and got into that late model for a handful of starts and, you know, was able to kind of pick that up out there and Roseville and Irwindale and race some of the West Coast tracks for a while. And then that kind of translated to the K&N series, which was probably a little bit early of a jump when I first got into it, kind of got into it and struggled there for a little bit. And then had the chance to keep going with it. Fortunately, kind of got it figured out. And that ultimately led to where we are today.
That's awesome. You know, it's funny you mentioned, maybe an early jump there. That's something that is the podcast grows and I pay attention to more and more series and more up and coming talent. Is that potentially a problem that we're going to run into that you see as far as, you know, like ARCA and K&N kind of joining forces and partnering with NASCAR as like the fourth series? You know, is someone's got sponsorship money, let's rush them up through the ranks, even though they may not be ready. First thing that comes to mind is I look at Daniel Hemric, who, you know, after his rookie year is already going to be out of a ride, you know, maybe could have used another year or two in the Xfinity series. Do you foresee that maybe being an issue down the road?
Yeah, I mean, I see that as an issue now, you know, I mean.
Sure, yeah, right. Yeah.
What percentage of, you know, I don't know. I, you know, I'm just throwing this out there. What percentage of racers at the K&N ARCA truck and even Xfinity level are self-funded, right?
Sure,
so
sure,
when you ask that question, you can always kind of say, you know, yeah, some of them probably should be there. Some of them have developed along the way and gotten to that point, but some of them I think, you know, probably shouldn't. But the end result, which I do a lot of coaching and a lot of driver development stuff on my own, you know, especially over the road racing side of things. One thing that I look at is the parents, or, you know, who probably the main supporter of the kid who's coming up, they want to make that move fast because they can, because they have the financial resources to do it, and they want to see their child at that level. They sure. want to see him move up the ranks kind of no matter what's happened, because, you know, a parent is always going to have kind of a blind eye, right? I mean, it's never going to be the kid's fault. There's always going to be circumstances. There's always going to be something. So it's okay. We performed, you know, at this race or this, and so it's time to move up. And so I think you are seeing a lot of that now, and there's absolutely no reason that that's not going to continue.
Yeah.
Because it just is going to, because the matter of fact is it's harder to bring in sponsorship dollars. The majority of dollars are starting to come from family relationships. And until that really changes, I don't know why that system would change.
I'm with you. You mentioned it, and it was my next little talking point here. So nice segue there. You mentioned that you do some driving and coaching and all that kind of stuff. Talk a little bit about the various drivers. I know you've helped Justin Haley and coached him a couple years back. What got you into that, and do you approach how you teach somebody a little bit different than how you get out there on the track yourself? How's that correlation work for you?
So my coaching background goes back almost 10 years now. And when I was 18 for a job, I actually started working for the Ford Racing School out in Salt Lake City, which was at Miller Motorsports Park at the time. Had that kind of right there in my backyard at the track that I'd grown up racing at, had a lot of close friends and close ties there, and people who had seen me come up through the ranks being from Utah, and it was just kind of a perfect fit for me. And that was, you know, a driving school, very similar to a Skip Barber or a Bondurant school. I liked getting in and getting the opportunity to do that because it was just something a little bit different. I felt I was so passionate about racing. It was fun to give it back to everyday people that were also passionate about it, or people that were race fans that wanted to learn. And
sure.
it was a good way to make extra money. Right? So I got a little bit of a background coaching on the school side. And then when the time came that I wasn't racing myself in 2014 and 2015, I moved to Charlotte, North Carolina. And I'd had a couple relationships. I'd had some connections, especially on the Canadian East side of things. People that had always said, you know, hey, if you've got the money, come drive for us. We'd love to have you. But I kind of stuck my foot out there and was like, hey, you know, I've been coaching for the school. Maybe I could do some spotting. I've done some spotting stuff before. You know, maybe I could help out. And I actually, my very first coaching client was actually Kaz Grawa when he was running in the Caden series in 2014, I think, kind of the end of the year there. I got to work a handful of races with him. And we're pretty successful. I mean, we got his best finishes of that year together, and was like, hey, you know, I feel like I made a positive impact here. And then that translated to working with Justin the next year as he came into the HCOT program, and kind of latched onto him for a good while there. Really, Justin propelled that, because as we went and we were fortunate to win a couple of K&N East races and to win the K&N East championship, he also ran the Trans Am series, the TA2 series for Mike Cope Racing, which took me back to my road racing roots. And so JJ was totally new to Trans Am, or to road racing at the time. So I was able to go in and help him. And his first full year of road racing was in 2016, which was the same year that he was racing full-time K&N. And we also went out from him having zero road racing experience at all to competing for a championship that year. I think ultimately finishing third or fourth in points and being a contender all year. And through his performance in that garage, I was able to grab a handful of other clients also in that garage, some of them also with the Mike Cope Racing team. And so that's become a staple for me. So now every weekend that I can, which is all but two of the Trans Am races this year, I'm at the races. I've got three full-time clients over there, and another two or three that come part-time. And that's become something that I enjoy doing almost as much, some days more than driving myself.
Awesome.
I love kind of thinking about it from a different standpoint. We have data, we have video. I love road racing, don't get to do it myself all that much, so it keeps me there. And it's just a great group of guys that I get to work with. So I really enjoy doing the coaching and plan to continue coaching. And then, you know, I always approach it as myself, because I've been fortunate to drive so many different things, so many different scenarios. I always try and relate back to my clients as a driver, one who's had success, and say, you know, this is what I would do if I was in the car. This is, you know, what I do in this situation. So yeah, it is very relevant to my actual racing, and something that's applicable.
That's so cool. It's crazy just how things end up coming full circle and kind of just falling into your lap sometime. And like you said, you know, to work with one guy in the garage and, you know, get success, you know, auto industry has obviously been on connections for the most part with a lot of things. So, you know, you've relied on connections and you've probably been that connection for somebody else, to kind of help guide them through their career. And that's awesome. I love stories like that. That's very, very cool.
Yeah. Like I said, it has been fun. It's been fun, like, and something I want to continue doing and hopefully have the opportunity to keep doing for a while now.
Awesome. All right. Let's transition. Let's talk some ARCA. So a couple of weeks ago, I had your friend and teammate Christian Eckes on the show. He talked about how you guys have been racing each other for a very long time, and you guys have been able to kind of keep the racing and the business side of things separate from the friendship. How awesome is that? Because I'm guessing that might be hard to do for some people.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Christian's a really, really great kid, and you know, he's 10 years younger than me, but with that being said, we do have a great relationship off the track, and I would say we are very close friends, and that's something that I think shows a lot of maturity, especially for someone of his age, to be able to distinguish off the track and on the track stuff. And it makes it fun, because you know, we do have that relationship. Hopefully we'll continue to have that relationship off the track, and we both realize that when we are on the track, you know, we are competitors. We're both out there to win races and to succeed, but that's a job. And sure, you know, sometimes it can get mixed up, but he's been great about it, you know, when I've made mistakes, and hopefully vice versa, you know, he feels the same way. And I've always looked at this as something that you just can't take too seriously. You know, the racing is not worth sacrificing relationships and friendships, in my opinion, as far as the on-track side of it. I know it's emotional, and I know it can be very frustrating. But at the end of the day, you know, those relationships can be forever, where, you know, on track racing against each other can just be a temporary thing.
Absolutely. I love that. It's awesome perspective. All right. So this year, four wins: Pensacola, Salem, Michigan, Springfield. And here's an interesting stat that I found really interesting anyways. You've got 13 top 10s and 13 top 5s. So it's rare to see top 10s match top 5s. 18 races in, 13 top 5s or better. That's really impressive. Talk about your season and your and the team as a whole for 2019 a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's what you're pointing out is a good and bad thing. I mean, when we run on the 25 car, we've been very competitive all year. We've had good cars, and we've been able to put a lot of good races together and finish inside the top five every race that we've finished. But therein lies the problem, is that we've had too many races that we haven't finished. We've had, frankly, a lot of mechanical issues that have taken us out of position to win some races, top fives and other races. I mean, things that have made this championship battle as close as it is, and things that have been frustrating, you know, no fault of anyone's, I don't feel like, maybe just some bad luck here and there, but sure. That's kind of what you see is, you know, we can run the top five unless something happens, because every race that you see where we're outside of the top five, we're going to be laps down. It's because there was some kind of major issue. So wish we'd been able to clean some things up, you know, especially, you know, a couple races come to mind, like Salem a couple weeks ago, we were running second, broke a lower control arm, you know, Gateway earlier this year, we led the most laps, broke an axle, you know, looking at Pocono back earlier in the year, we were running in the top five and unfortunately broke an axle there and had a little bit of an issue. So That stuff's been frustrating. It's been a little bit hard to move past that stuff. But like I said, the 25 guys have put a great car together every weekend. And I do have a great crew that no matter what happens, you know, however you fire off the trailer in practice or anything, those guys have always worked their tails off to give us a good car, you know, throughout the end of the night. Because there's been times when I've struggled and haven't been able to learn a track as quick as others. And have taken me a little bit into the race, and they're able to tune around that for me. So it's been a lot of fun. It's been great to work with Venturini Motorsports and to have the opportunity to do this and to go out and compete and to have fast cars every weekend and compete for wins. And, you know, I'm glad that whether this is, you know, first of several full-time seasons or my last, you know, I don't know what's going to happen going forward, but I'm glad to have done it with Venturini and to have had the opportunity to go compete for wins as much as I have this year.
That's awesome. I want to go back to the Michigan June ARCA race, if I can, for a minute, because I was there. I was there with some friends, the PETM podcast down in Atlanta, who came up for the weekend. And to me, you know, I watch a few ARCA races throughout the year. I've been to probably the last five or six ARCA races at Michigan. And that felt like an odd race to me, more so than the other ones that I've seen. Only three cars finished on the lead lap. But if I recall correctly, the end of the race ended up being a little bit closer and had a little bit more excitement between you and Ty Majeski, who was going and trying to make it three in a row for him. And you stopped that there. Was that a little bit of an odder race? Did it feel that way to you guys out there on the track?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was, you know, we were able to qualify on pole and lead the most laps. I mean, we arguably should have led every single lap that day. And so, unfortunately, it came down to being a little bit more stressful than I had hoped, which seems like it's the case more often than not for me. But, you know, they had to try something, and I gave credit to those guys, and, you know, they about made it work. They were a quarter of the track away, you know, just probably half a mile away from making it work and beating us, which would have just been almost catastrophic. Right. I mean, that would have been just terrible considering the pace we had that day. But yeah, that one was interesting. I just, you know, we were able to kind of just put an incredible race together, just had an incredible car that day, throughout the entire day, which was a lot of fun to drive, but probably made that race a little less exciting than the fans had hoped for right until the end there.
No, it was, I tell you what, that made up for, I don't want to say snooze fest, but I mean, obviously, you know, it came down to just the lack of cautions that day, and the few, you know, everything just kind of went predicted until the end there, but it definitely gave the fans something to cheer about, that's for sure. All right, so a few races ago, you had a pretty decent point lead over Christian. He's been able to cut that down to 5 with 2 to go. The two racetracks, though, that are left, Lucas Oil and Kansas, I don't see any starts from you at Lucas Oil, but you've got 3 starts at Kansas, 2 third places, and a win back in 2017. You've got to be excited with your chances going into the last two races here.
Yeah, so actually, I do have 2 starts at Lucas Oil Raceway. I finished 2nd there in 2017.
Oh, awesome. Sorry, my bad.
And yeah, led a handful of laps, you know, came really close to winning that night. Ended up just getting beat by one of the typical short track late race strategy calls where someone put on tires, you know, with about 15 laps to go because of a late caution there. So finished 2nd in that one. Ran Lucas Oil last year and just had a ton of different issues, you know, so kind of wrote that one off. That one wasn't very good for us. And then Kansas has always been one of my favorite tracks. Kansas was the first track that Sinclair and I competed together at. We've just always enjoyed going there. It's a good time of year to be up there. You know, it's nice. The weather is always great that time of year. I enjoy the mile and a half tracks more than short tracks or super speedways to begin with. And Kansas just seems to fit my driving style. So hopefully it's one we can go have another good run at. You know, hopefully it's one that we can go into. We kind of got to get through Lucas Oil, I think. I mean, Lucas Oil is probably Christian's best track. Like I said, I've had a good run there before, but I don't have the confidence there that I do at Kansas. So, you know, we just got to see how things play out here, and we got to stay smart and definitely not have any more mechanical issues and hopefully avoid bad luck. And then if it does come down to Kansas, you know, I'd be excited about that.
Absolutely. That'd be awesome. One last one here for you. 3 weeks from the last race at Salem to this weekend's race. How do you keep up momentum and stay focused with that sort of a lengthy time off?
Well, I think for me, it's kind of a blessing. I mean, you know, I'm older than most of these guys. You know, I've got a wife, I've got a house that we're working on. I've got, I'm in school full time. You know, it's actually nice to have a little bit of time off to be able to focus and get some of those things done and enjoy a weekend at home. You know, I've still been coaching a lot. The Trans Am season really kicks into gear in September and August, I guess. That's kind of when the majority of their races are. So the schedules actually match up really nicely. So I'm able to make it to a lot of the Trans Am races on these off weekends from ARCA. So staying busy with all that. But I think this past weekend was the first weekend that I've been home in like the last 11 or 12.
Wow.
So
yeah,
that was nice.
That'll put some stress on stuff for sure. Absolutely. Hey man, where can everybody follow you at on social media to keep up with all that's going on?
Yeah, it should be pretty easy to find. I'm on Michael Self just about everything, in one form or another. So Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And Sinclair's got some pretty good stuff going on their social media. They've got Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram too. Their Twitter's pretty active. They do giveaways most races with some of their dyno merchandise. So give them a follow and definitely follow along during the races to win some cool swag from them and check out some of the stuff they do and some of the stuff they'll be doing towards the end of the year. They're a cool company. They do a lot of different neat stuff, got a lot of different marketing initiatives that are pretty cool and fun to follow along with.
Awesome, man. Well, hey man, thank you so much for taking some time to come on the show tonight. Good luck over these next two races. Good luck, and let's do it again soon.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Sounds good to me.
Awesome, man. Thanks so much. Have a good one.
You too.
Thanks. Lap Traffic Nation, very cool to talk to Michael Self there. The whole teaching and coaching thing really intrigued me there. I think that's awesome. I don't think too many people maybe would have known that about Michael Self there, which is really cool to hear that side and just to kind of see how things just kind of snowballed for him as his career has gone. It's also cool to start to incorporate the ARC series a little bit into the Lat Traffic podcast over the last couple weeks. Christian Eckes a couple weeks ago. You know, it's going to be part of NASCAR. We'll see how that gets integrated as things move forward there. All right, trucks. Well, trucks are still off, and we still got 12 days from tonight for the next truck race Saturday, October 12th at Talladega. Kind of recapped that pretty well last week with PETM. So if you missed that, go check that out. And also a teaser to go get you to check out my guest spot on PETM last night. We talked about Thor Sport Racing, their truck engine issue, their declaration, if you will, to make some noise and try to get added to the playoffs again, due to it being a engine issue from the third party. So go check out what we all had to say about that on PETM from last night. I won't reiterate that there. But what I will do is I will move on to the Xfinity race from the Roval. Chase Briscoe picks up the Stage 1 win. Cole Custer with the Stage 2 win. Little SHR teammates action there for 1 and 2. But race winner, A.J. Allmendinger. And I got to tell you, you know, I talked about it at the start. It, just an incredible, exciting weekend of racing at the Roval. You know, the track position proved to be key all weekend as restarts were intense as they went into turns 3 and on the backstretch with the chicane in turns 11 and 12. Penalties with both races were interesting. Practices, we saw guys coming in hot, overshoot some of the turns, which added to the excitement of the race because they didn't learn. And it's hard. I mean, I could only imagine how hard it is, right? You know, coming in hot off some of these turns with racing for position and the playoffs. I think that's what adds a little bit too to the excitement of the race, which I absolutely love. Like I said, track position is key, which is what let Chase Briscoe start on the pole and lead the entire first stage, avoid on-track penalties like fellow playoff contender Tyler Riddick. He had two penalties on the first lap, missing both the back and front chicane. You know, and as expected with the road courses, when you can avoid going, you know, a lap down when you pit, you know, we saw some early pit strategy to try to set up for the stage two, stage three. But, you know, you're out front, you're able to avoid, you're able to lead things. You can go in and defend maybe one or two cars versus, you know, side-by-side racing once they were able to clear from the lead and get into turn one and two into the infield portion there of the track. Stage two, Custer stayed out for the playoff point. I'm guessing they knew they probably weren't going to, they didn't have the car to win, wanted the stage and some extra points there for the rest of the round. Stage three, man, this is where the Xfinity race got interesting early. You know, some late cautions in stage three were fun to watch. Almost became a little bit too chaotic for me there. I don't mind a few, you know, restarts that lead to extra cautions, but it almost got out of hand. I'm glad it didn't. Bell and Briscoe with some on-track payback action there. Let's see. And then the three late race cautions that Allmendinger just had perfect restarts each and every time. Allmendinger able to play spoiler to the playoff guys, able to hold off Riddick, who on lap one had two penalties, was able to come back, finish second. He was able to hold off Cindric and Allgaier on those final restarts and pick up the win for Colic Racing. You know, Dinger, with one lone cup win back at Watkins Glen 2014, he's got three Xfinity wins at some familiar road courses, Elkhart Lake and Mid-Ohio back in 2013 and now the Roval. He obviously loves him some road course and plate racing. I went and did a little research for the show. AJ's got 11 top fives in his cup career, and seven of those came at a road course or plate race in the same kind of figures for his Xfinity starts there. So he definitely likes plate and road course racing. You know, but here's the thing that I think is awesome. You know, AJ's out there helping Colic Racing this year, helping a young guy like Justin Haley, who in his rookie year in the Xfinity Series made the playoffs, very consistent. And I think part of that has to do with the help that AJ's provided to that team. You know, this team is not a powerhouse. They don't have a powerhouse backer in Cup, for example. You look at Custer and Briscoe, who've got SHR. You know, Colic Racing is building an Xfinity team, trying to go out there and compete against those powerhouses that have representation in the Xfinity Series, like SHR, Junior Motorsports, JGR. Guys out there that are putting together an awesome story behind their legacy as they try to build this team, which is awesome. You know, AJ's not there just to go race cars to try to get a win. It's nice that he was able to do that, but he's really helping develop their drivers, which is really awesome for that team. And like I said, to get a win to boot is pretty sweet, and look forward to continuing to watch that team grow, because it's been a lot of fun this year. A couple notables, quite a few playoff drivers in the Xfinity Series outside the top 10. Bell in 12th, Annette in 15th, Jones in 16th, Haley 31st. But was surprised, like I said, to see Tyler Riddick overcome two early penalties and finish second. The Xfinity Series has one more race for round one. Right now, it's John Hunter Nemechek, Jones, Sieg, and Justin Haley on the outside looking in, with John Hunter about 11 points behind Annette, who is currently sitting there in 8th. Jones is the same 11 points back. Sieg 37 and Haley 39 points out of the 8th spot. I think those guys would have to go out there and win, obviously, for the transfer. But I think there could be a potential spoiler with John Hunter or Brandon Jones. 11 points is not impossible either. So, you know, we'll see what happens there. You know, if Annette or Gregson have a bad day, it's possible we could see some things switch around when all is said and done for round one next weekend at the Monster Mile. All right, let's shift over to the Cup race, which saw Kyle Larson pick up the Stage 1 win and Chase Elliott pick up the Stage 2 and the race win. This thing started off crazy, and it did not disappoint the rest of the way. Kurt Busch, Chris Buescher, Eric Jones, Bowman, Hamlin, Johnson, all involved with some sort of damage in a late Stage 1 caution, with some of those guys able to rebound. Bowman finished second. Johnson finished ninth. Others, though, did not favor so well, like Eric Jones and Kurt Busch, granted, I didn't think they were going to get through. Even if they had a good day, it probably would have been a struggle. But we'll get to that here in a minute. Question for you guys. I think Stage 2 finished under yellow, if memory serves me correctly. And I'm not going to lie. As I said, I had to watch a race on DVR because we went to the Lions game, came home. I put some of it on, you know, one times fast forward there, just to make sure I could get through it Sunday night. And like I said, I'm pretty sure I saw Stage 2 end under yellow. And that said, you know, if we're going to have stages, which we are, and I think most of us are okay with them by now, we award points, we're awarding playoff points. You know, we try not to end a race under yellow without overtime attempts. You know, for the finish of the race, we have unlimited attempts until the white flag is taken. Now, I'm not saying we go get that sort of crazy mid-race, but, you know, should we at least have one attempt at a green and white checkered flag finish for the stage? For me, it feels very anticlimactic to award points under yellow. I'm not even sure how I would answer this question, but it's something that I was thinking about as I was putting the show together. And, you know, you guys have heard me and other people, PETM, we complain at length about how many laps get wasted under, you know, stage break cautions. And, you know, just, and we could get rid of all that if we just don't count those laps. Very simple fix, but for some reason we just can't get that through for whatever reason. Anyways, I digress. That said, you know, you look at what kind of extra laps get added. Let's say there's three laps to go. They're not going to be able to get it back to green before the stage ends. So there's three laps. It's not like they're able to speed up the process because of when pit road closes and when the leaders get to pit and when the lap down cars get to pit and the commercial break and talking to the guy that won the stage. You know, so it's not like the fact that a stage ends under caution that it saves us additional caution laps. It just adds to it. So if that's going to be the case, if it looks like a stage is going to end under yellow, and I think I'm talking myself into the answer that I would actually answer this now, is why not have at least one attempt to end the stage under green? You know, if a caution comes out on that lap, fine, boom, end, freeze the field, that'll end the stage there. But why not? What do you guys think? Hit me up on Twitter and let me know what you got for that. Am I crazy or what do you think? All right. Let's see here. 9 playoff drivers finished in the top 10. Johnson playing spoiler there with a 9th place. And those 9 all advanced to the next round. Let's see. Let's talk Chase Elliott for a minute. Dude slams into the wall, restarted back in the 30s, and with 40-some laps to go, with the help of some timely yellows, was able to get this thing to victory lane. To rebound like that is absolutely remarkable. It wrecked from the lead, came in a little too hot, and I was like, man, this dude is done. I'm glad I was able to preserve the bubble on Sunday and not know that Chase was going to be able to come back and win that. That added to the excitement while watching the race. Could Chase Elliott maybe steal some thunder from Joe Gibbs heading into the playoffs? He won at Talladega this spring, and he won the playoff race at Dover last year. He's obviously becoming a fan favorite and a favorite of odds at road courses. He's got them dialed in. And HMS, a 1-2 finish, that hasn't happened too much as of late. A good day for Chase. Great day for HMS. Chevy's getting some mojo back here with a few races to go in the season. Let's see. Playoff guys not in the top 10. Larson, 13th. Almirola, 14th. Hamlin, 19th. Kurt, 20th. Newman, 32nd. Kyle Busch, 37th. Brandon Jones, 40th. And a couple other guys. Matt D finished 11th. Michael McDowell passes kidney stones on Friday, then passes 10 cars on Sunday for a top 10 there. That dude had a hell of a weekend, that's for sure. And then there's the Bowman and Bubba Wallace issue. Obviously, some beef there for sure. That's the emotion that we love. Both guys think that they were right, which is totally cool. As I mentioned last night with PETM, Bubba had a long time to sit in that car and dwell. And that probably just got him madder and madder every lap that passed. And he knew as soon as that race was over, he was going to do something. The blinders were probably just on. He probably didn't even realize at the time he was so heated what was going on. Not that that is an excuse by any means, but I could see that being a rational response to the situation there as to why that happened. NASCAR said they were going to have a talk. Bob Pockrass tweeted out earlier this afternoon, no penalties from this weekend, which means no penalties to Bubba. I don't have any issue with that, to be honest. I don't like the move by any means. I think it was over the line for sure. But I also don't think just because it was over the line means that it needs penalized. Bubba obviously does not have a history of this type of post-race behavior to that extent. They probably talked to him, said, hey, we're going to give you a warning, I'm totally cool with that being the case. Definitely going to be interesting to see what happens between these two this week at the Monster Mile for sure. All right, let's talk some standings here. Going into the race, it was Bowman, Jones, Bowyer, and Kurt Busch on the outside looking in. Bowman and Bowyer did what they needed to do, race their way into the next round, knocking out Almirola, Newman, Kurt Busch, and Eric Jones. And even with his bad finish this week, Kyle Busch still holds on to the lead as we head into round 2 with, and here's where things are interesting, Martin Truex Jr. is only 5 points back in second, Denny Hamlin in third, Logano in fourth, and even with his good run this weekend, Kevin Harvick slipped from second to fifth. Granted, only a couple points out of third and fourth with race winner Chase Elliott in sixth, followed by Brad Keselowski, Kyle Larson, Alex Bowman, Ryan Blaney, William Byron, and Clint Bowyer wrapping out the top 12. And like I said, here's the interesting part. Third place, Denny Hamlin. Seventh place, Brad Keselowski, only separated by 6 points. And eighth place, Kyle Larson, the last transfer spot for the next round. And 12th place, Clint Bowyer, only separated by 6 points. Could definitely be a battle for a couple spots in this round, especially with the wild card that is Talladega coming up here after Dover, where Clint Bowyer has a win. Brad Keselowski has won multiple times to advance to the next round. Dover, Dega, Kansas, everyone is going to try to get the win this weekend to take some pressure, try to take some pressure off. We will see what happens at the Monster Mile on Sunday. All right, that is going to do it for the race talk. Let's get right into some social media. Make sure you check out the website, thelaptrafficpodcast.com. Like on Facebook, The Lap Traffic Podcast. Follow on Twitter, at Lap Traffic PC. On Instagram, The Lap Traffic Podcast. Listen to the show on iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn, Blueberry, Acast, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. Just search The Lap Traffic Podcast. Subscribe, download, leave a review. Climbing up the charts, which is awesome. Came out chartable. Has the is now charting all podcasts in different categories and all that kind of stuff. And believe it or not, Lap Traffic Podcast is on there, which is pretty awesome. Not gonna lie. Giveaway: 5,000 followers got a rear quarter panel to give you off Eric Almirola's car, which is pretty sweet. Now, to help get there, I think I'm at like 4,000 and change. So at 4,200 followers, I've got a Lap Traffic Podcast t-shirt to give away with one of the new awesome logos on it. So I'll get that out here tonight. Go retweet and help get things moving along there. Speaking of new followers, Michael Brewer at BrewCrew1660 from Ohio. Grover Harville at Harville Grover, big fan of Brad and Tyler Riddick. And Lee Barreto at Lee Barreto from Miami and a big Chase Elliott fan. Congrats on your win, sir, this past weekend. Don't forget to check out TobyChristie.com. Check out the website for merch. Got t-shirts and all that good stuff there. And of course, if you want a free sticker and koozie, just fill out the contact page on the website, and I will be happy to send one out to you. And one last thing, make sure you go check out Big Heads Media. They've got you covered from all kinds of different podcasts. They are trying to get podcasts, a couple from each sport and each team. This network is growing like crazy, which is really cool. And here is another awesome promo from one of the awesome podcasts on the Big Heads Media Network.
My name is Michael Pals, and I am the host of the Jet Up Bleeding Green podcast here on the Big Heads Media Network. You can also find me anywhere. You can download iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, anywhere you can find me. I am there. I will bring you my opinions on the latest Jets news and information every week here on the Jet Up Bleeding Green podcast.
Not going to lie, hurt to play that one a little bit. P-A-T-S, Pats, Pats, Pats. Sorry, baby. Had to do that. Had to do it. But hey, if you're a Jets fan, go check out the Bleeding Green Jet Up podcast on the Big Heads Media Network. Oh, it is time. Things are getting silly in NASCAR as the playoffs heat up. The silly season is also heating up. News broke over the weekend that Stenhouse out at Roush Racing. I got to tell you, I was a little surprised to hear that one. And I was also surprised in the defense that Kevin Harvick came to on that, who represents Stenhouse with KHI management and all that kind of stuff. Just kind of sounds like a bad deal overall for everybody involved. Roush, Ricky, KHI, you know, just not fun when business has to go that route there. But well, also what will be interesting is does Roush throw some extra investment? Or are they just going to, you know, same thing, different day with a different driver? That will be curious to see how that pans out. And also, where could Ricky end up? That's also going to be something to keep an eye on there as well. Let's see. One other tidbit of information for you. Saw this by NBC. Jayski tweeted it out and all that. As we head to Dover, which is where Jimmy Johnson picked up his last win in June of 2017, 19 different Cup drivers have won a race, and they all owe Jimmy Johnson a thank you and a bouquet of flowers, because that probably wouldn't be the case if Jimmy was still dialed in like he was. And there are three guys in particular that I think owe Jimmy Johnson a bouquet of flowers, and that would be Kyle Busch, who since Jimmy Johnson's last win has 17 wins. Martin Truex Jr. has 16 wins. And Kevin Harvick has 13 wins since Jimmy Johnson's last win. So those three need to do something and send him a thank you for sure. Because if Jimmy was still on his tear, I would guarantee those numbers would be a little lower for those three guys there. Because Jimmy, man, there were seasons 8, 9, 10 wins there. And to go 2.5 basically almost here without a win is something else. That's for sure. All right. I think it's time for a little weather, and let's get Mr. Brian Newdorf on the line. Lap Traffic Nation back live on the air this week after a couple clips the last couple weeks. You can follow him on Twitter at @NASCAR_WXMAN. Mr. Brian Newdorf, sir, good evening. How are you?
Apparently there was nobody more important than me to be bunked this week, so.
Well, I tell you what worked in your favor was I did the interview last night, so it opened up time for today. That's funny. I like that. How are you? Things going good?
Yeah, except for, like I was telling you, as you know, we're all college football fans. Yes. And, you know, you and Michigan, and then, of course, me and Purdue. And the most Purdue play ever, you lose your two starters, your most offensive people in one single play. against Minnesota. We already have issues with Minnesota, so it's just
I feel like we all have that one play each year that we all look back on, and for me this year I already know it's going to be the Lions in Kansas City, looking back at the 4th and 8 on their own 40-yard line, and we let them pick up the first down, march down, score, and seal the deal, which should have been a Lions victory, but such is life as we are still searching for our first playoff win in 60 years. So, you know, I feel your pain.
That's true. And then as a Colts fan, somebody kind of asked a question about, it was kind of a joke when they said, we just couldn't buy a break. And there was like, well, Luck did retire. So,
well,
sorry, but yeah, that was a play on words. Yeah, for us, Luck retired.
I got you. Wait a minute, did you get to catch any of the Roval action this
I saw
weekend?
I saw the beginning of the race, and I saw that the weather did kind of start to try to creep in near the end, but they have rain tires. There was no lightning, so I wasn't overly concerned. I saw the beginning. I didn't see the end, so I did see the Bubba Wallace video.
Yes.
I didn't see what precipitated that.
It was early, like lap one is what started that. Like, that was 109 laps of boiled temperature that he was just waiting for the race to end and kind of exploded there a little bit.
Wow, that was kind of more of a Kyle Busch thing to do.
It's definitely drawing some interesting conversation on social media. That's for sure.
Well, it didn't seem. I generally get the impression. I guess it's mixed, but for the most part, it seems like people seem to like Bubba Wallace. But then him doing this, whatever collateral he had, just seemed to be, he just kind of flushed it away.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I said a little bit ago, he just lost his cool a little bit. I think he probably just got out. Like I said, 109 laps is a long time to think about something. And, the checkered flag hit and he was able to climb out of the car and it was, he had one thing on his mind and there wasn't anything going to stop him, So
that's the raw emotion aspect of it. Yeah. And I feel bad that I missed the end of the race because, I thought last year's race was pretty good. But the response on social media was quite the opposite.
I thoroughly enjoyed this. I enjoyed both races last year and this year. I very, very happy with what we've gotten from the Roval in terms of new level of excitement and anticipation. I think it's awesome, to be honest with you.
Okay. Well, I agree. I think the road courses have been the instrument for a lot more exciting racing than the ovals and stuff like that during the season, you know, and it gives that, I think, I mean, I think the chase needs to be kind of, if you're going to have a chase, here I am looking at it, the playoffs, but if you have playoffs, you need to kind of, you know, give it a, you need to give it a feel of what the season was like. Absolutely. I mean, I wouldn't mind them going back out to, you know, out towards Sonoma. Possibility.
Let's put it this way. I like this type of race better than I like a plate race being in the playoffs. But if you're going to have a plate race, I think you need to have all representation in the playoffs, which you do. You've got short tracks, you got intermediates, you've got super speedways. So I think the playoffs complement each other in terms of the races or the tracks that we go to.
So quickly, I know you're usually the host, but any big surprises on who did not advance forward?
You know, if I had to say who, I mean, I don't think Eric Jones is a surprise. I think Kurt Busch is a surprise just because he had a very consistent season. Mm-hmm. Just a couple of bad lucks came his way into the playoffs. So I'm not surprised based on how the last few weeks for him worked out. But if you were to tell me, you know, here we are 29 races into the season, Kurt Busch wasn't going to make it to round two. You told me that on week two, I would have called you a few words and asked you what you were smoking.
And then we would have counted your money. Right. So,
I am kind of surprised that Clint Bowyer, was able to sneak in. I didn't think he had a snowball's chance in hell to get into the next round. So I actually say him getting into the next round is kind of a surprise as well. Other than that, I think it's kind of played out as expected for the most part. I think this next round is what will be interesting with Talladega race two. That could really throw things.
Anybody's going to want to lock up Dover first.
Absolutely. Well, that's the thing. And you got a lot of guys that are close in points. You know, the standings are not that separated. So, you know, just because you're in fourth doesn't mean you got that big of a jump over the guy in eighth. So positions will matter for sure over these next three races.
All right. And speaking of Dover, we got a forecast to talk about. As some of us have been baking our butts off in the first day of October and into the end of September. This is nuts, my friend. I'm going to tell you that right now.
Well, I tell you, it was 88 today in Metro Detroit.
Oh, cry me a river.
But no,
I'm
10 but
degrees warmer.
Here's the thing, though. Friday, it's supposed to be like 58, so.
Well, enjoy it. That's all I'm going to say. It's fall. You know, the only thing we haven't seen yet is a pumpkin spice NASCAR race, a car. You know, that's the only thing yet.
Don't give Starbucks any ideas.
It's not Starbucks, NASCAR. We'll have the pumpkin themed car out there or something like that. Joey Logano will drive it. There you go.
Talking about
paint schemes. There we are. Hey, yes. So forecast wise, it actually looks pretty dry going into Saturday and Sunday at Dover. I see a timing. So when I start seeing anything kind of moving on Sunday night, I get a little leery on timing this early. So with that in mind, it could come in. There's always a possibility that something slows up, something speeds up as far as timing of stuff. If it slows down, it's good. If it speeds up, then it could be coming sooner. Let's go pretty much Saturday, 100% chance of racing. And then Sunday, I think we're really on the good side, but I'm going to go 80% just because we're talking about a cold front that's also going to bring you and I cooler temperatures going into things, and then it slows out. So we'll watch that fairly closely.
Well, if the race gets started, the vortex will happen, and everything will stay.
Oh, man, so I liked you. You know, I really liked you.
I had to.
What's worse. I don't know what's worse. I think that may be more – I think that's worse than the sending me your app.
My app?
Somebody sending me a picture of their weather.
Oh, I got wow. Wow, I really climbed up there real quick with that, didn't I? Oh, that's funny. I love that. That's
No, it's fine. You can believe what you want. But if there was a vortex theory, why do we have rained out races?
I'm
just going to leave that there.
I was just throwing it out there just to stir
but
up
I think,
the pot.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know how you are. I see how it is.
Oh, that's awesome. All right, Lap Traffic Nation, big thanks to Mr. Brian Newdorf for calling in this week after a couple weeks of some audio clips that I'll take the blame for. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at NASCAR_WXMAN. Sir.
You mean I wasn't live? You mean, what?
We're live-ish.
Ish. I mean, no, I meant when I recorded it. It's kind of like Clint Boyer. I'm not getting paid.
Oh, that's awesome. All right, man. We'll talk to you next week.
Yeah. Follow me on Twitter, on Facebook. I'll be a little bit better. I'm still settling in, but with races being quiet, sometimes I'm quiet too. That actually goes hand in hand. You know, why blow up your Twitter stream with, hey, it's nice outside. Okay. There you go.
Right. Absolutely. I'm with you. All right, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good.
All right. We'll see you. All right, Lap Traffic Nation, great to catch up with Brian Newdorf there, but now it is time for this week's Lucky Dog and Lap Down picks. You guys know the drill by now. Tweet your picks at the end of the race, or you can call the Wave Around Hotline 248-965-9538, and I will play your picks back. I am going to get into my picks for this weekend. My lucky dogs are the race winners this weekend. How can they not be? AJ Allmendinger and Chase Elliott for sure have my lucky dog picks. Lap down picks. Yes, two here, too. I got to go with Bubba and Newman. Bubba, just because I get it, but I probably could have done a little bit better. Newman, man, you were in ninth and you missed the cutoff. So bummer there for sure. All right. Over to your tweeted responses. Jess at Iowa NASCAR fans. Lucky dog Bowman wrecked like six times this weekend and somehow fought his way in. And he picked up a top two. Lap down Almirola. Really surprised he couldn't pass more cars late when he had fresher tires. Scott at 1985 Wagner's lucky dog is definitely Chase. Leader to wall, fly to winner. Lap down 18. A true racer wouldn't just quit with seven laps to go. Mike at Odell Michaels, a lucky dog. Chase made it interesting, but was able to retrace his steps into the tire barrier for a victory burnout. Lap down, also Chase for ghost riding the car into the inside wall after the burnout. Eddie at EG3_fast. Eddie's lucky dog Bowman somehow escaped to move on to the round of 12. Had quite the afternoon. Lap down, Newman ticks off another competitor at Charlotte. Didn't obey the rules, cost him a great opportunity to move on in the playoffs. Rowdy Dragon at the Rowdy Dragon's lucky dog toss-up between Chase from running into the wall to running the siren and Bowman for sneaking into their next round after an early spin. Lap down goes to the 20th, Eric Jones. Three consecutive bad weeks and heartburn ends his championship hopes. John at Dean Aders, a lucky dog, the Roval, another two great races this weekend. Bravo, bravo, 4 for 4. Lap down, the man pressing the caution button. Bowman spinning mid-pack, doesn't deserve a caution, but single car spins with no one around deserve it? Hashtag caution consistency. That would be nice in a perfect world, wouldn't it? All right. Let's get to your calls on what is a jam-packed Wave Around Hotline.
Hey, Brandon, it's Kathleen at KHI Fan. I enjoyed both races, but to me, the Cup race had more of what I expected, which was Calamity. It sure delivered that, and it was a lot of fun to watch. Another point is that we had another great finish for Matt DiBenedetto, who finished in 11th, and I'm really excited to see what's going to happen next year with him moving over to that Wood Brothers car. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch. My lucky dog this week is going to Chase Elliott, not for the obvious reason, but for doing his burnout at the scene of the accident, and then having to watch his car as it rolled away from him. And to put a cherry on all of that was Mark Martin responding to Chase's comment and saying that he could do something more stupid while leading a race. And he was obviously referring to the time that Mark turned off the track thinking he won the race, but it was only the white flag lap. So I think Mark wins that. He still gets the prize for the dumbest thing that you could do. And my lap down this week is going to go to Newman for missing advancing on by one stinking point. I'm bummed. I would have liked to watch him continue on and see just how far he could have gotten. Apparently, at some point in time, there was somebody that got by him on the track that Ryan didn't block, and look what happened. So, anywho, that's all I got for this week. I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Oh, Kathleen, thank you for calling in. Who knew Newman would let somebody past him? Wow, what a chances there. And what a great recall of Mark Martin there. Thank you for mentioning that. That was awesome. Good to hear from you. Hope things are well. All right, let's get to the next call on the Wave Around Hotline.
Hi, this is Matt at Matt Camper 1994. I thought this week the race was an amazing race to watch on TV. It was one of the best races I can remember this year so far with the Volvo. Last year was such an amazing race, and I think this year with the Volvo in play, especially with an elimination race, it was absolutely, I think, 10 times better than it was last year for sure. So my lucky dog for this week has to go to Chase Elliott for the way he came back from that crash earlier in the race to win the race was such an amazing thing to see, and I really am looking forward to seeing what he has to offer in the remainder of the playoffs. And unfortunately, my lap down has to go to Erik Jones, who had all those lucky things that happened. He did the right things in the first two races with that unfortunate disqualification after the second race, and then going out unfortunately with that crash in the beginning of the race was just so unfortunate, and you know it is really bad to see Erik Jones go out on that note. And for that reason, that is my lap down for this week. And just to briefly sum up, I'm really looking forward to being there next week in Dover for the race to start the second round of the playoffs. I'm really hoping to be an amazing race and a great weekend in Dover next weekend. And I'm sure next week I'll definitely be able to give you more what I think about the race in Dover. So thank you so much.
Oh, Matt, thank you for calling in. I think you are a first-time caller on the Wave Around Hotline, so appreciate it. So glad that you called. And please call back next Tuesday. Next weekend. I love when people call right when they're leaving the track. You can always hear extra excitement and emotion from everybody. So thank you for calling, and please keep them coming for sure. All right, got a couple more for you on the Wave Around Hotline.
Yo, Brandon. Yo, Lap Traffic Nation. At Fred Rosado here with a double lucky dog call. And I really don't have a lap down pick this weekend. Lucky dog, AJ Dinger. First official win in 5 years. Not only that, done with a dominant fashion. And it was done on quite possibly most challenging road course NASCAR has on the schedule. Not just the win that gets him the lucky dog wave around, but the celebration that took place after the win, such energy, enthusiasm, and appreciation he showed for that victory. With helmet removed, mind you, finding a little girl to give the flag to, and taking even more time with the fans, taking pictures, high fives, you name it. Just so awesome to see, man. Drivers do that at the end. And he's not the only one, but, man, it was great what he did. You know, this is the type of thing that fills the seats, man. And people see this on TV and are like, man, I want to go. Maybe that guy will come, you know. I mean, that's the type of thing that fills the seats. It keeps people watching. So, overall, just great for the sport. My second lucky dog, Chase Elliott, of course. Yes, he hits a tire barrier, whatever you call it, head on, 45 to go, and came back for the win. That's the big story. But the entire race, man, he was strong. If you paid attention to him, and I think Sherwin touched on that on his podcast tonight. I mean, just he was doing some amazing things when he wasn't in first place, and people really weren't paying attention to it. So his smart decisions flat out outdrove the field, period. I mean, that boy may be the future road course driver to beat. I don't know. I mean, it looks that way. He was really good at it. But once again, no lap down, man, because I played that card quite a bit. And this weekend, despite some questionable things that transpired, two negatives don't make one negative. I mean, it cancels the whole thing out. You follow what I'm saying? I think you do. So there was a bunch of negatives going on, but it kind of canceled each other out. I can't pick a side. Anyway, this message has been copyrighted for Lap Traffic Nation and not to be used by Kyle Busch haters. And a reminder, folks, if you ain't first or last, trademark Ricky Boggy. Second place, the first loser, trademark Kyle Busch. Shake and bake. See ya.
Oh, Fred Rosado, I absolutely love it. That was awesome. Fred, couple awesome points you made there. First off, just a classy win by AJ from start to finish on the track to the post-race festivities. Absolutely 100%. And I think you're spot on. Chase Elliott is definitely proving to be the current guy that you have to be concerned about when you go to the road courses. And all, hey, listen. Social media is full of negative nonsense out there. So if the weekend of racing was so good you can't think of something to give a lap down, I think that's absolutely awesome. That means, I think, as a fan, you were happy walking away from this weekend. And obviously, any sporting event you're going to go to, there's going to be some questionable things that you're going to see you didn't like, whether it be from a team, player, driver, official, whatever it may be. But if everything else can overpower that to where you can't think of something bad, that's a good thing, in my opinion, as far as I'm concerned. So absolutely love it. One more, the voice of the Wave Around Hotline, Mr. Andrew Kantzian.
What up, Brandon? Man, what a race at the Roval. I don't even know where to begin in talking about what we saw. I'm just going to give my lap down and lucky dog because, shit, I could go on for hours about how awesome that race was. I think, fandom aside, Chase might have just had one of the best comeback that I've ever seen in my time as a fan. I mean, he drove that thing, as the term has been said many times this week, like a lemming off a cliff. And I tell you what, came back and won. I looked at the car and I said, man, you know, it doesn't look too bad. I don't know if they really bent the splitter on it, but evidently they didn't. So the diecast company has just got another $55 plus shipping off of me. Chase Elliott's easy lucky dog. Lap down, I hate to do this, and I hope it doesn't overshadow how great the race was, but NASCAR is going to go a lap down. Just utter crap in the inconsistency and the cautions. A lot of those, I think they gave a pretty BS response, and they let Ford Martin do it. Or Martin, whatever, the Ford guy, I don't even know his name. But he doesn't really have the greatest reputation, and how he got a job is just because of his last name, I would imagine. So NASCAR goes lap down. Inconsistency with the cautions. It's an elimination race. That Ryan Preece caution in the beginning really screwed Eric Jones out. Not that he probably really had a great chance at winning anyway, but that's pretty disheartening for him and his team. I would have gotten out, and I would have been MFing people up and down because that didn't have to happen because he got wrecked on a restart right after that. So, you know, it is what it is. Hopefully they can clean that up. And I'm going to put a friend of mine a lap down for calling me at 9:30 in the morning on Sunday to tell me that she has been blowing motors all morning. So we got to tighten up our engine program down here. All right, bud, I'll talk to you later.
Oh, man, you get that engine worked out. You get that corrected, man. We can't have that. It's absolutely hysterical. I love it. Thank you for calling, as always. And I'm with you as far as NASCAR and the inconsistencies there. You know, it took me back to the conference championship last year in football with the Saints there and that missed, blown, obvious call with the Rams for pass interference. You know, some things it's like, man, what game are you watching that you miss something like that? So I feel you. I'm with you there. All right. That is going to do it for this week's Lucky Dog segment. Absolutely loved it. Lots of tweets, lots of phone calls. Just fantastic. Can't be more happy right now, let me tell you. All right, it is time to close this thing out with a little lap traffic fantasy. All right, Lap Traffic Nation, it is time for the fantasy segment this week. And joining me on the line, he's held the lead for the last 2 weeks in a row in the playoff portion of the Lap Traffic Fantasy League. Joining me on the line, Chad Robb. Chad, what's up, man? How are you?
Hey, thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely. Thanks for calling in. Glad you're able to make some time. What did you think of the racing this past weekend?
It was wild. You know, that road course, roval, whatever you want to call it, it's kind of turned into the Bristol of road course racing, you know. And when you're playing a fantasy game, it just makes you sweat, you know, the last half of the race, because you just want your drivers to finish.
Yeah, absolutely. It's almost like the wild card race of the round there. You know, one thing, you know, you've got your own fantasy site. Tell everyone a little bit about that, and how hard is it to kind of preview and give people an idea who to pick when you only got a year's worth of data to go off of?
Well, I have a website. It's fancyracingtips.com, and I provide fancy NASCAR picks for DFS games, the Truck Series, the Xfinity Series, and I do season-long games, the Fancy Live game on NASCAR.com, driver group game, one-and-done games like we do. So I try to accommodate all the different kinds of fancy NASCAR games, and I got a forum on there where people can ask me questions, and I'll give them my advice on picks every week. And like you said, this year we only got a year's worth of data to go on. This new Aero package has really changed the game. It really brought the pack together in the racing. So, you know, you really have to go off of the data this year instead of previous years. I know in the past I always would look at a driver's track history as my number one factor in my picks, but this year you pretty much need to stay to what they've been doing on the track this season.
I feel you there, and I think they announced today that most of the rules package is going to stay the same next year, so maybe next year, especially at the intermediates and all that, you might be able to loop back into 2019. But I'm with you there 100%. And you've been doing this a minute too. You've been doing this for quite some time, so you've got a reputation to back you up for sure.
Yeah, I started playing fancy NASCAR in 1994. I was big into fantasy football before that, and in a magazine I found this Ned Jarrett fantasy NASCAR game. I said, well, I'll try that, and I ended up finishing second, winning some money, and then I really got into fantasy NASCAR.
It's crazy how little coin will do that for you, right?
yeah, it will. And then 2008, I started writing for Bleacher Report, covering NASCAR and football for them. And then in 2012, I got picked up by Fox Sports and became their lead fancy NASCAR writer for FoxSports.com.
Well, it's no wonder you're in the lead then in Lap Traffic Fantasy. all right, man.
I tell you, it hasn't been easy.
Well, and
you got some good competition.
It's going to get more challenging next year too, which I'm really excited about. Let's recap where we're at with 7 races to go. Nobody took AJ Allmendinger in the Xfinity Series, and only one player took Chase Elliott, and that was Paul Hollenbeck. Week high this week was 93 points by David James with his picks of Brad Keselowski and Chase Briscoe. Second week high was 88 points by my uncle, Mr. Matt Crowd, with his picks of Harvick and Cindric. Let's see here. Your picks of Truex and Cindric are good enough to keep you in the lead. in first place with 355 points. So nice job there, sir. In second with 352 is Brad Carnes. In third with 345 is David James. In fourth with 343 is Ted Anderson. In fifth with 327 is Jess Rose. In sixth with 324 is David Mullins. Seventh and eighth with 321, Matt Crowd and Mick Rose, Robert Keplinger. In ninth with 313, Greg Whited and John Entwistle. In 11th with 305, and Aaron Studwell wraps out the top 12 with 304. This was the cutoff race. We dropped four, and unfortunately, we lost Michael Elliott, Paul Hollenbeck, and Crystal Smoke. And we also lost in dead-ass last place the MOATF podcast, who are already talking smack for next year on how awesome they're going to do. So sorry, boys, you lost. But, hey, at least you made the playoffs, because I didn't either there, sir. But all righty. Sir, what do you say? Are you ready to make some picks for this weekend?
Oh, absolutely.
All right, Lap Traffic Nation, we are headed back to the Monster Mile for the first race of round two of the playoffs and the first race of round two of the Lap Traffic playoffs. I said it earlier, be on the lookout for Chase Elliott. He won this race last year to advance in the playoffs. He finished fifth here in the spring as well. And Martin Truex Jr., who I thought might have swept round one of the playoffs, won the spring race this year, also has two wins, five top fives in the last six races at Dover. Kyle Busch, Kevin Harvick have some recent wins as well. Harvick with the fall win in 2015 and the spring win in 2018. Kyle with the fall win back in 2017. And how could we forget Dover, June 2017, the last race that Jimmy Johnson got his last victory. HMS finished 1-2 this past weekend at the Roval. Jimmy shown some speed the last couple weeks. Could he do the unthinkable after missing the playoffs, pick up the win, and play spoiler at the Monster Mile? Who secures their spot and takes some stress off from Talladega? We will find out this weekend, but first, it is time for our picks. Chad, over to you for the Xfinity race. Who do you got?
Well, in the Xfinity race, you really only have four choices. And so when I look at them, I think the best strategy, once I got the lead, is just to pick the favorite and make somebody beat me with another driver. So I'm just going to go with Christopher Bell. He's won the last two races here. And I think he's going to make it a three-peat this weekend.
I am with you 100%. I, too, have Christopher Bell to make it three in a row at Dover. All right, who is your cup pick this weekend?
In the Cup Series, I'm using the same strategy. I'm going with the favorite. Going to make somebody try to beat me with another driver. I'm going with Martin Truex Jr. He's got enough stage points that he doesn't have to worry about stages. He could short pit before that last stage and get some track position, and I think he's going to be tough to beat.
All right. I don't mean to alarm you, but I, too, have Martin Truex Jr., and anytime anybody has matched my picks, it has not favored well for them. So if you decide to change your mind, when the email comes out, feel free to do so, because I wouldn't want to jinx you by any means there, sir.
Does it sound good? Maybe I better go with Larson.
I love it. All right, man. Thanks for calling in, and good luck this weekend.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. All right, Lap Traffic Nation, that is going to be a wrap for episode 152 of the Lap Traffic Podcast. Make sure you check out the website, thelaptrafficpodcast.com. Like on Facebook, The Lap Traffic Podcast. Follow on Twitter, at Lap Traffic PC. Subscribe, download, review the show, iTunes, Podbean, or wherever you listen to your podcast. Go check out PETM from last night. I was on. It was fun. Go check that out. Don't forget about the contest that I'm going to put out here in just a minute. Big thanks to Michael Self, Ryan Newdorf, and Chad Robb for calling in tonight. I'll work on somebody for next week. Don't get caught chasing the lucky dog. Make sure you tune in each and every week to the Lap Traffic Podcast. See ya!